In Philippians chapter 1 and verse 5, and I got real nervous this morning because Frank spent an awful lot of time in the book of Philippians. But in Philippians chapter 1 and verse 5, and in chapter 4, verses 15 and 16, I believe, as Frank referenced this morning, Paul is reflecting back to the events of Acts chapter 17, and he says to the saints at Philippi that they had fellowship with him in the furtherance of the gospel from the first day, chapter 1 and verse 5. And then in Philippians chapter 4, verses 15 and 16, he makes reference to the saints at Philippi participating with him in the beginning of the gospel when he departed from Macedonia. I will try to give a brief history, a little bit about the group, and let you know of some of our activities. I recognize that you've had probably about half a dozen men come and speak to you in this regard, so you kind of know, hopefully, about what to expect. At least I hope you do, because I don't quite know what to expect. But in November of 2004, a small group of about 60 Christians meeting on the northwest side of Indianapolis, for various reasons, but primarily because Duke Realty and Boone County had announced their plans for about a 6,000-person community, complete with homes, schools, industry, and commerce, was planned for the cornfields further north and further west of Indianapolis. And these families decided to be, and I appreciated their attitude, proactive rather than reactive, and said, before that whole area gets built up, wouldn't it be prudent to get a congregation started in that area so that when the houses and when the families and when the commerce comes in, there's already an active, thriving congregation there. And so for the next 2 months, that group met primarily in a Lions Club building. And then in January of 2005, they asked me, and I began working with them. We met for 3 or 4 months in a computer repair store, which was quite interesting for a while. And then were able to purchase 12 to 13 acres, and no, our church building doesn't look like that, but that at least was the graphic that I could find. But anyway, just off of I-65, northwest of Indianapolis, on the corner of a state highway and a county road, a farmer that was selling off his two-story house and the adjoining 13 acres. And I'll show you some pictures of that in just a moment. But there are a couple larger towns, Lebanon further up the road to the northwest, Zionsville to the east, some smaller towns, Fayette and Whitestown, but largely it is still just a bunch of cornfields. The economy, the construction and building industry, obviously not being the greatest in the last 4 or 5 years. The proposed growth that Boone County and Duke Realty anticipated just has not happened. But I want to, again, at least give you a little idea of where we are and hopefully what's coming in the future. This is a map, and I don't know how well you're able to see it. Ronald Reagan Expressway is designed to be, and I'm going to go back to this outer loop, 465, that just circles Indianapolis. Ronald Reagan Expressway is supposed to be an even more western outer loop than you have with 465. And the blue arrow, or excuse me, the blue line indicates where that expressway will hopefully be built within the next couple years. the red line, the yellow line, and the orange line, it is undetermined as of yet exactly where the expressway will come through and connect to I-65. But you can see with the green arrow, right where our church building is, right where our property is. If the expressway is completed on out our way and connects to I-65, I believe, again, the brethren have got a piece of property that is in an ideal location. The yellow area is the Anson community that Duke Realty is in the process of trying to build and construct. And so, again, you see we're just across the interstate from that. There is a cornfield directly across the street from the church building that is currently for sale. And the county maps indicate that it has already been plotted out for, I believe, 212 home sites. Nobody has bought it up. Nobody has built on it yet. But, again, the potential and the future is there. This is what the two-story house looked like when we purchased the property, and with some fabrication and some work on the part of a number of our members, this became our entryway, and in what the facade looked like, the front of the building. This is what basically, once you rip out walls for the kitchen, the dining room, the living room, the downstairs bathroom, and the laundry room, this is what you're left with. And this became our auditorium. Believe it or not, if you can get an appreciation for how close those folding chairs are situated and where the lectern or podium is there, or pulpit, one service that I'll talk about in just a few moments, we're actually able to get about 107 people in that room. It was get to know your neighbor real well service, but we managed to do it. About 2 years ago, because we were at about 95 members consistently and recognizing that just did not give us room for any more growth, we added on to tying into, again, if you see this little drive-through area, and I'll try to go back to this picture, we tied directly into where you see the entrance there, and just basically built a large room. It is a four-walled auditorium, but it certainly gives us a lot more room, and that is what the inside of it looks like. No plumbing, because we're on a septic system and city water has not yet reached us. We could not put in plumbing, could not put in a baptistry without going through a great deal of expense and redoing the whole septic system, putting in sprinklers and that sort of thing. It really is just a shell. But it gives us the necessary room to grow, which hopefully will be coming. I'm not going to mess with having bullet points flying in, because I want to spend about half the time talking about the work there, and I want to spend about half my time this evening studying with you on a particular subject regarding Jesus coming in the flesh. But currently we have about 85 members. We do not have elders. We have tried at least twice in the last 5 years to study the subject of the eldership, talk to men the congregation thought might be qualified, to see if they desired the office, if we could install elders. That has not yet happened. As you can imagine, maybe some of you can't, to be perfectly honest with you. Many of you possibly growing up in North Alabama, you've never known a congregation that did not have elders. Let me tell you, I have worked under three elderships, and there is wisdom to God's plan. trying to sit in a business meeting, trying to make decisions, trying to move a congregation forward without elders, and 25 men with 28 different opinions sitting in a business meeting is just not my idea of fun. But we are keenly aware of what the Scriptures teach, and it is our desire. It is frequently mentioned in prayers regarding our desire to have elders, but right now we do not have elders. 14 of our members, 14 of our current 85 members, were not raised in the church. They come from denominational backgrounds. Four of our members come from institutional backgrounds. And I only throw that in there because, again, add to that not having elders, add to that various levels of spiritual maturity and understanding of the Scriptures, you can perhaps gain an appreciation for just how difficult at times the cooperative work of that local church and those brethren really might be. In the last 4 to 4.5 years, we have baptized 9 persons, 3 of those from the community, 6 of our own young people. And perhaps the most distressing number to me, as I look back over the last 4 or 5 years of our work at South Boone, while we have 85 members currently, over that span of time, we have had 46 members either move, transfer because of job changes, go to other congregations because of family health obligations, or just go to other congregations because they're larger, they don't sit on white folding chairs, it's closer to my house, you name it. That's a little frustrating for a brand new work that has started from scratch to over 4 or 5 years lose 46 members when I look back and, you know, you can't look backwards, but I think, if you just held on to half of those, you know, we'd be up and over 100. But this has been one of the challenges of the congregation. Financially, it had been our desire. We had set a goal for ourselves. Each of the congregations that were helping in my support were made aware of this. We actually tried to set forth a plan, put it in place. It was our goal to be self-supporting by January or July of 2011. Because of some of the move-outs, because of job losses and job changes, and because of just the economy in general, I don't know if we are going to make that. But I will say, on a positive note, to the congregation's regard, in the last 2 years, from May of 2008 to May of 2010, the local congregation, South Boone, where I am, has picked up $2,250 of my outside support, trying to relieve congregations such as yourselves here of their obligation to me. In July of this year, they will pick up at least another $250. So they are at least trying to do what they can, given the circumstances. This is what I really want to talk about because this is what gets me excited. I want to tell you a little bit about what the group has attempted to do and has tried to do. Because when we started 5 years ago, it was very much agreed that we don't want to just keep house. We want to be evangelistic. Not just because that is what helps a congregation sustain itself, but it is because that is what the Lord requires of us, that we need to be producing fruit, and we need to be evangelistic in our efforts. We do something a little, we do a lot of things a little different, but regarding this particular instance, each September, instead of having a weekend gospel meeting or a fall gospel meeting, we have what we refer to as a special service. We've done this now for 4 years in a row. each of the members is encouraged to specifically invite 5 to 6 neighbors, co-workers, relatives, somebody with whom they have tried to invite to services, tried to have a religious discussion, tried to have a home Bible study. And we actually have formal invitations printed up. You are cordially invited to, and we include an RSVP card and envelope, just as if you might be invited to a graduation open house or a wedding or something like that. And what we have found is that, man, people really feel pretty obligated to respond one way or another and feel pretty obligated to maybe even show up. We do it Sunday afternoon, and we pick a specific topic, and we've had a very good turnout. The crowd of 107 that I mentioned back when we were in the two-story renovated house was one of these September special services. We have the last 2 years included and advertised on a sign out in front of the building a Saturday community singing. And we have had a few people from the community come and join us for that singing. And, of course, that gives us an opportunity then to invite them to services, particularly to the special service. For the last 2 years, there is a neighborhood right across the interstate, and one of our families lives in this development called Royal Run. We've tried to conduct neighborhood Bible studies. The first year we did it, we met in the clubhouse, and we posted signs around in the neighborhood, and we met, and we just would meet Tuesday evenings, and we would have a Bible study, and in hopes that people would feel free and welcome to come and join us and participate. If nothing else, they would see the signs. It gave us a presence there in the neighborhood. It was pointed out, though, that typically the clubhouse is reserved for private functions, and maybe people are just feeling a little awkward about coming in and insinuating themselves into the study. So when the weather permitted, the next year, we started just having it outside on the grass in folding chairs right there by the playground. Nobody joined in, but a few people did make comments. They were walking their dogs or playing frisbee or watching their kids play on the playground, and we were sitting there having a Bible study. I'm not sure what we are going to do this next year, if we're going to scrap that, continue to revamp and tweak it or not. But I appreciated the brethren being willing to try something to give ourselves a presence there in that neighborhood. We frequently engage in congregational studies. I know I heard announced this morning you all are having a study tomorrow evening on the Holy Spirit, I believe. We've done similar congregational studies on personal evangelism, on male spiritual leadership. And as different topics come up, we will conduct those. Our ladies that are able meet every Tuesday morning for a period of prayer and a ladies' Bible study. Don't laugh at this next one. It's not my way of getting in my Starbucks fix, but there is a gentleman in the congregation. He has not been a Christian just a few years, a little bit older, but his wife and his 3 sons, none of them are interested in religion in any way, shape, or form. It's very difficult for him being in that environment. Not only are they just ambivalent towards religion, they are somewhat hostile towards his Christianity. And so for the last 3 years, as his schedule will allow, he and I always get together on Wednesday mornings at Starbucks, and we study and just try to spend some time together in the Scriptures in encouraging him. If you've read the reports, you're probably familiar with this next bullet point. But a couple years ago, I had the chance to study with some students, and I'm the complete name of this facility is the Indianapolis School for the Blind and Visually Impaired. And there's really no acronym that's easy to refer to the School for the Blind, but I don't use that term to be politically incorrect. It's a mouthful to say Indianapolis School for the Blind and Visually Impaired. But one of our members, a young lady who at that time was a junior senior in high school, is legally blind and living in close proximity to the school. She would attend there during the day and eventually transferred into public school, but had a lot of friends there. And typically, depending on your condition or situation, it's like a campus environment. You will come and live on the campus, no matter where you live in the state, no matter where your family's from, you will live there for the school year and then go home for the summers. And a couple years ago, she was engaged in some discussions with a friend of hers, and Jimmy was a young man who admitted to me when I first met him, he said, I am an agnostic. And I was impressed that this senior in high school even knew what agnostic meant. But he was very intelligent, very sharp, and Ashley had warned me he is going to be abrasive. He is going to be argumentative. And for whatever reason, he was not with me. And over the course of the school year, and I guess actually we studied probably for a year and a half, he really made some great strides. He graduated, and I put him in touch with the brethren. He's a freshman at Ball State University this year. Put him in touch with the brethren in Muncie, and have stayed in contact with Jimmy, though I haven't been able to continue studying with him. But just a few months ago, Ashley came to me and said, she's now a freshman in college, but she said, hey, a couple of my friends at the blind school wondered if you were going to come back and keep studying. And I said, sure. And these were a couple girls who would occasionally sit in while I was studying with Jimmy. And one girl in particular, her entire family is Roman Catholic, and she, again, is very, very sharp. Her name is Sammy. She recognized that there is just an awful lot within Roman Catholicism that is not scriptural. Now, this young lady is completely blind, but she listens and she studies, and she wanted to know the truth. And so, of course, I'm salivating. And I told Ashley, let's start this week. You set it up and we'll go. And so I was able to study with Sammy and with her friend Riley, who comes from a Baptist background. And then Riley's boyfriend AJ joined us. And so with Riley and Sammy and AJ and then Ashley there, it was kind of quite a crowd every Tuesday in the student center. We studied various aspects of Catholicism, and I kept coming back to my very first lesson was just on biblical authority. And the kids grasped that concept right away, which made the rest of the studies fairly easy. And the last class that we had was just this past Tuesday, and we studied just denominationalism in general. We studied infant baptism, we studied Mariology, we studied the priesthood, we studied the papacy, we studied Christ as the foundation of the church. I mean, I felt like we were able to cover a lot of ground in a relatively short period of time. Our last class was Tuesday, their last day of classes, and all three of these kids were seniors in high school. Their last day was Wednesday. They graduated Thursday and they went home. But our class ended on Tuesday with Riley saying, I'm going to be in Louisiana for the summer. Do you know of any churches in the town where I'm going to be? And Ashley's eyes got about this big because the whole time we've been studying with Sammy. And Riley now recognized, I need to find a non-denominational church to worship with. Sammy, the week before, contacted the Lord's Church in her hometown, talked to the preacher, and made arrangements to be picked up for church services. And when she went home Memorial Day weekend, they picked her up, and that was her first Sunday to worship with them. She called me on my phone as I was driving down here yesterday morning. And she started asking me questions about being baptized. And it was just one of the most enjoyable phone conversations I've had driving down the interstate, studying with this young lady over the phone. She had had a rough couple days. She went home Thursday, and Thursday night, her mother, her grandmother, and a Catholic priest kind of ambushed her at home and really put the screws to her. And she called me in tears on Friday and then talked to me on Saturday. So I've still got some work to do. She lives about an hour and a half away. If she wasn't baptized today, Lord willing, I'll be able to talk to her Monday evening or Tuesday. It has just been a great door of opportunity opened to me. Both girls, even though, again, all of these were seniors, both girls said, "Hey, we've got a couple friends who might have some questions for you. Would you be willing to study with them next year?" And I said, "Absolutely." I don't know if that will come to fruition. I don't know these girls personally. It's kind of a third-hand sort of thing, but I'm very hopeful. Besides that, and I mentioned this in my reports, I will try to conduct 1 to 3 home Bible studies a week. I've had a chance to study with a couple Mormons. I've had a chance to study a few years ago with a gentleman who is a Muslim. He was a Palestinian that was raised in Jordan, was in the States for a few years. He has lost interest because I wanted to talk about conversion and he wanted to talk about world religions in general. I've had a lot of opportunities and again, appreciate the attitude of the brethren there and their evangelistic outlook. Hopefully that gives you some idea of at least the work going on, the work that you all participate in. In my support with the brethren there. I want to close by looking at Colossians chapter 4. And regarding all of our efforts and regarding, you know, not exactly knowing what the future holds for the congregation and the growth in the housing market, I simply call your attention to Colossians chapter 4, beginning in verse 2, where Paul asked the saints in Colossae, "Continue steadfastly in prayer, watching therewith with thanksgiving, praying for us also, that God may open to us a door for the word to speak the mystery of Christ." And brethren, that is what I petition from you. I want to thank you. Many of you, I would thank all of you, but I know that many of you have sent letters or emails and different notes of encouragement. I apologize if I'm not always able to remember a name or put a name with a face, but it does mean a great deal to myself and to my wife. We remember you all in our prayers, and what Paul requested, please continue steadfastly in prayer, praying for us that God may open to us doors of opportunity. I greatly appreciate the congregation here, the eldership, and your willingness to be a part of the work in Northwest Indianapolis.